It's Learning to Listen with Quinn, Naomi, and Charlie.
Hell yeah. Welcome to Learning to Listen, L2L, the podcast. Guys, we just did about 20 minutes, 30 minutes of bonus material. So go on to patreon.com/learningtolisten to hear all of that. patreon.com/learningtolisten, and you will get about another 20 minutes to 30 minutes of bonus material. But that's the only spot you can get it. Okay, hold on. I lost my notes.
Uh-oh.
I'm lost without my notes.
We're still here for you.
That's okay. Quinn. You know Quinn.
Ooh, he's trying.
Where the hell are my notes?
We should just let Lord Charlie do the intro.
There they drop the ball. Are. Okay. You can do an edit there, Charlie, real quick.
Probably.
Here we go. Ready?
Go.
Okay, welcome. We are talking today all about Sly and the Family Stone. There's a riot going on, but yes, that's right. You've made it to L2L, where we're talking about music and the way we listen to music. We're trying to engage with the music we listen to. We're all about the lost art of engaged listening. So that's why we're talking about albums and consuming the album as a whole artistic statement, the way artists intended. This is not a biography show. No, we just get all that shit from Wikipedia, just like you do. But instead, this is a pure guttural and visceral reaction to the music we are listening to. My name is Quinn. I am your host. I have my co-hosts with me. I've got on the ones and the twos, DJ Charlie Scream.
Charlie Scream.
All right. And as always, hoping for a dick pic for Valentine's Day, it's Naomi Carmack.
I don't know if you want to slide in the back door after they just had beans. I don't know.
Oh, yeah, you're right. That is something we should you should consider before you slide in the back door. Okay, guys, we are doing Rolling Stones 100 Greatest Albums of All Time, according to their top 500 list from 2012, amended in 2020. Do you guys want to know what album we're doing today? I mentioned at the top of the show, but just to let you know once again, we're going to be doing Sly and the Family Stone's There's a Riot Going On. It comes in at number 82 on the Rolling Stones Greatest Albums of All Time list. There's a Riot Going On, sometimes referred to as Riot, is the fifth studio album by American funk and soul band Sly and the Family Stone. It was recorded from 1970 to 1971 at Record Plant Studios in... shit, I've never had to say that out loud.
Uh-oh.
Sausalito, California. Sausalito. And released later that year on November 1st by Epic Records. The recording was dominated by band frontman Sly Stone during a period of elevated drug use and intra-group tension. Ooh. Okay. So, let's talk about it, guys. So, Sly and the Family Stone. How aware?
I love them.
I'm definitely aware of them. Actually, probably more aware of the songs that have been covered by them than their originals, but yeah.
Oh, really? Oh. Interesting.
Well, for example, Everyday People, the first time I heard that song, it was done by a group called Arrested Development.
Oh. Me and Charlie with the twinsies today.
Interesting.
Okay. Yeah, I guess their stuff has definitely been covered, sampled a lot too.
That's probably, sure. Yeah.
You hear a lot of their stuff sampled, and especially like, I feel like early 90s, I don't know for sure off the top of my head where I've heard their song sampled, but I know I have heard them, I feel like a De La Soul would have used them, a Tribe Called Quest, somebody in those lanes for sure has sampled some Sly. Yeah. What about this record though? This particular album?
Previously, I had only really heard the single from it.
A Family Affair.
Yeah, Family Affair, the big single, anyways.
Yeah, the big single, I guess. What about you, Naomi?
I hadn't heard any of these songs.
Not any of them.
None of them. No.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Interesting. I definitely familiar with Sly and the Family Stone. Definitely one of those bands, though, that I don't think I ever like picked up an album and listened to an album. Mm. You know, compilations, greatest hits, wherever it would pop up, throw it on some oldie station, you know, and you're going to hear like Everyday People for sure, right? Like, that's got to be probably their biggest hit, is got to be Everyday People, or at least it's their most enduring for sure.
Mm-hmm. They've had a bunch though, right? Like for sure they've had a bunch. They mentioned them in this album.
yeah, they were a popular group.
They name dropped their 60s own songs
into the 70s. And they're name dropping their own songs. Well, okay, what are some of their other hit songs?
Dance to the Music's a hot track.
Oh yeah.
Yeah, Dance to the Music for sure. Mm-hmm. Let me think. I'm trying to off the top of my head what's coming to me.
Thank you for Everyday People, me Dance to the Music. Again.
Oh, thank you. Thank you. I love seeing this, that it's written out phonetically, for letting me be myself.
Be myself. Yeah.
Again. Yeah. That's a big hit.
Be myself. Yeah. I've heard that.
Oh yeah.
Hot Fun in the Summertime is them.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Oh yeah. Yeah. They're a pretty prolific group for most of like through the '60s. It really helped popularize like that kind of pop R&B and early funk sound. Even dabbled with a little bit of psychedelia and really influenced groups like later on, you know, like bands like Parliament and Funkadelic, and therefore the P-Funk All-Star lineup.
There is a guy in the band by the name of Jerry Martini. That is a kick-ass name.
Forget all their songs and all their accomplishments. Give me Jerry Martini.
Get me Jerry Martini on the phone. I love him. I don't even know him. Anyways.
Yeah. So like a very popular group, like they were selling a lot of records back in the day. I guess though, that by the time they hit this album, you know, it was, things were getting a little dicey. A lot of tension within the group. Apparently Sly himself had started kind of getting in with a different crowd. Little disillusioned with the hippies and all the like, you know, summer love, and even though
PCP?
They
PCP,
he got into some PCP. Yeah, yeah. Started hanging out with the Black Panthers, you know. But man, didn't just get himself a PCP habit, heroin, cocaine, like just whatever. So things were getting a little rough around this period, I didn't know until I'd looked into it, because I was just, you know, I was just like, oh yeah, a group that had their day. And I guess the story of Sly is actually fairly tragic, right? Like, tried a couple of comebacks later on and never really made it. And then was kind of like, has kind of waned. He's still around. He's still alive, but has waned in and out of obscurity and problems with drugs and alcohol and whatever else over the years. I'm not totally sure where he's at now, but you know, I've heard everything from like, oh yeah, he was like living in his car for a while, and you're like, man, crazy, you know, like, but I think it's a bit of a mental health thing. But so this record apparently comes around along at a time where he's dealing with a lot of that stuff, obviously mental health, drug addiction, just disillusionment with the 60s culture and whatever, you know, and goes from this like kind of sunny poppy disposition to this album. There's a riot going on, you know. It's no matter what your reaction to it was, as compared to the earlier catalog and even some of the later catalog, this one stands out quite a bit. It is definitely a darker album. It's definitely less commercially viable. You know, it's definitely a lot more experimental. It's something else. So before we get into your reactions to it, you know, we put it out there in the world that we were doing this and just talked to a few people. And I noticed something, that either people were oblivious to this album, right? Like, yeah, you know,
like, I don't know. Never heard of it.
But the people who know about it were like, that is the best fucking record that's ever been made, and you better not say shit about it.
I mean, I got a quote if you want one.
Sure, let's hear a quote.
Our pals in the Denim Daddies said, if you don't love this album, you're an absolute moron.
Yeah, strong opinions, right?
It's a big swing.
Yeah. I heard some similar sentiment from some other people. So, okay, bearing that in mind, this one is wild.
Yeah.
Like, it's wild in a way that some of the other wild records have not been wild that we've had to listen to. So I'm really curious to find out what you guys thought. And yeah, I'll save my some of my thoughts, but I just put, like, I made all my notes in the very top of the notes. I put at the very top, I just put in big, like, you know, letters and quotes and underlined it. Slow burn. Okay. But then I want to hear your thoughts about the first time you put this album on and what you thought. So I don't know who wants to go first, but
I'll do it.
Okay, Charlie, let's hear it.
I fucking loved it.
From note one?
Pretty much. After just, like, I think maybe the first track gets you into it to be all like, okay, this is kind of what you're going to, it's going to be like this. Do you have some old tapes that have been recorded over a whole bunch of times and it sounds like there's a film over top of all the music? Well, I hope you like that because there's going to be a lot of that. It's still an extremely funky album, but it's, I hope you don't mind being a little bit dark and a little bit funky or dirty, you know, like the kind of the funk that you get in a back alley kind of thing. That's what dirty you, that's funk. What you're in. That's what you're in luck for. Do you like drums? Well, I don't know if this is going to be your best day because there's a lot of old school sounding drum machines and I love them.
Oh man. Yeah. We'll get into that, but, okay. Okay, that's your initial reaction. Naomi, what was your initial reaction?
Well, I expected it to be somewhat enjoyable. I usually like this type of genre, you know. I figured it would be like a little more dated than what I'm used to, but it was all right. It was all right. I wasn't like extremely excited with it, but I noticed some interesting things here and there. It was cool.
Okay. I was wondering how you would react because... Because I'm not going to lie, like I said, slow burn because I put it on, you know, and without a context, I had definitely heard Family Affair before. Mm-hmm. But Family Affair out of this whole album is one of the more kind of straightforward, you know, like it makes sense why that's the radio single, even though apparently it's not the only single, but it makes sense why that might have been like the, as these days they call it, the focus track.
Right. I was hoping that Family Affair was like Mary J. Blige had sampled it for her song Family Affair, but I don't think it.
Oh, I thought you were going to say was the soundtrack to your favorite series of pornos from the 80s.
Oh, yes.
It's not incest. It's wincest. Anyway.
How we got here, I don't know.
Sorry. That's internet stuff.
Clip you very much.
Mm-hmm. No, okay. My first note that I wrote down is this is a mess. Right? Because it is, you know? And so when I'm sitting there trying to like really be analytical about it and I'm breaking it down, I'm hearing a pitchy bass. I'm hearing a bad kind of lousy, like, man, the mix is bad. The mastering is quiet. Like I had to crank this so loud to hear it. Mm-hmm. And man, I found that out the hard way in the car. You know, when you have the radio, like when you have the aux cable in and you pull the aux cable out and then you find out exactly how loud you had it. I had like the radio fucking nearly made me like swerve into traffic. I was like, what the fuck? That's how loud I had to turn it up to hear this thing. Yeah, I mean, I didn't do my deep dive of what was going on until after the first listen, but like, you know, just the fact I was like, man, this just sounds like a guy who's just lying on his back or something.
Could you just hear the crack pipe all over this album?
Kind of, yeah. I don't know. The performance is real weird and subdued, right? Like, and he's kind of marble mouth all over it, just like
marble mouth. Holy shit. I listened to the song Brave and Strong, I think that's what it's called, twice because I'm like, is it just me or is he just like going like there's no actual lyric. Like I couldn't make out a fucking word. So I listened to it again just to make sure I wasn't imagining that. But there's like, what are you even fucking saying?
Yeah, there's so many times on this album it's really hard to like get a, like understand the lyrics coherently, and also they're in the mix weird, and the mix is all over the place, but I feel like there's no way to avoid that, because you know, once when you find out that basically, okay, so yeah, he literally was strung out on heroin, mostly lying on a cot that he had brought into the studio, so he's on his back, he's fighting with the whole band, so he'd kicked them all out. He didn't make this record with the band. He got an archaic drum machine, the kind of drum machine where you had to just like, you know, like hold, like pressing keys, and then you would get kind of like the kind of thing, if anybody ever had that old organ in their house.
I love those organ sounds.
Where you could like put on the bossa nova.
So good.
You know, like that.
The first track that had that in it, I just got very excited. I was like, oh.
Yeah.
Now I want him to put some bossa nova on.
So he's like literally lying on his back. He's just running a drum machine on a tape, and just he's mostly playing the bass lines, and then he's improvising songs and editing them together, and then bringing other musicians in. But the thing was, when he would listen back, he'd be like, the thing that sucks about the drum machine is that it doesn't sound like real drums, because this is the fucking 1971 or whatever, right? Like, it sounds like, doop, dik, dik, doop, dik, dik. You know, like, so then he was like, all
like
right.
Like a metronome?
On a yeah, a little bit. Software? Yeah. That's kind of what the technology was like at the time, right? So he's overdubbing percussion and distorting the drum machine to make it sound more like real drums, and he must have just been overdubbing tape over tape plus all the edits and stuff like that. So, but then by the time you know you bring in other musicians, man, they're just playing over like fucking layers of tape.
Well, and that's what gives it its filmy sound the entire time. It sounds like shh, you're gonna hear shh, like, well, the whole time. That's
probably what affected the mastering, is you can only bring it up so much before you're just bringing up more and more tape hiss, right? Yeah, it's so like, it's so wild, man. It shouldn't work, but yet.
But wait.
But this is where I say slow burn after I made all my notes is like, because, man, by the end of this, I'm into it. I'm like, I'm so like, what the hell is even going on? This is just madness, and I'm here for it. You know, like it slowly but surely, even through the first listen, like my notes mostly have to do with like, all right. there's more cohesion to this than I gave it credit for at first. Well, this jam's kind of tight. This is at least interesting. Then it's like Family Affair. And I'm like, man, you know what? Now I'm kind of coming around on these lo-fi elements. I'm like, it's weird, man. It's like garage rock, or it's like the stuff I like about just that really archaic, you know, something like a William Onyebar, or like who I've
totally
for. I'm like, now he leaned right into it. He owned the, you know, early archaic electric, you
super
know,
synth.
Yeah, instruments and synthesizers or whatever that, you know, but it's like, I didn't even realize though that there's examples like this that are even technically a little bit earlier than that, that like, this is kind of some early electronic music, like, you know, like, I mean, there was Moog albums and, you know, like albums full of just synthesizers and stuff like that, but they were mostly showcasing the technology. This isn't showcasing the technology. This is using the technology as a means to an end. Right. So anyway, and then, yeah, so I think by Family Affair, and I think because Family Affair is kind of a jam, right? But it's, you know, it's a mellow jam, but it's just like, it's almost like it's soothing or something. I don't know. It's improvisational. It's loose, but it's tight. You know, like it. I think I'm halfway through the record. Not even halfway through the record.
Not quite.
Yeah, it's song Family Affair is number 4. I think my first listen through by Family Affair, I'm like, all right, I'm along for the ride, you know. Like once I was like, it's like I all right, this looked like a mess when I first got here, but you know, it turns out it's actually quite a party.
I can sit here and I can listen to it and have it going on in the room and do my thing and enjoy it happening. I've already given up on the idea of understanding anything he's saying. So you just, at that point, you kind of just take it for the music. This is, I've been trying to make an effort to listen to lyrics, but this is just not going to happen on this album. There was a couple times where I could make out what it was saying. And I mean, there's where the N-bomb was dropped.
Oh, I didn't even notice.
I didn't notice that. When did he do that?
I don't remember which song. I didn't write it down because I was like, you know what, weird, Naomi?
I actually went through the, I was like reading along the lyrics while I was listening to it.
You didn't see it? Seeing
that. I don't remember that.
I heard it. But I was like, and then I went back to hear, see if I heard it right again. But it was just kind of subtle enough that it didn't jar me like it does sometimes when I'm listening to some music.
Hmm.
Well, they famously, one of their big hit songs is that Don't Call Me N-word, Whitey.
Right.
Don't Call Me Whitey, N-word. Mm. And they go back and forth. And it's just like, it's funny because it's like a song about like unity and cohesion and like all their songs pretty much early on were like everyday people. What's that about? Right.
Yeah.
You know, and the Scooby Dooby Dooby.
But I realized too, when I'm listening to it in the context, it's like a word that, like, how do I say? I'm white, so I just stay away from it because, you know,
true.
Like, it's there. They can use that word to get across their expression in any way they would like to. And I just, you know, just because it makes me uncomfortable, it's not my story to tell.
Yeah. I mean, no, that's, that's,
I don't know how else to say that. You know?
No, I get it. No, that's, I think that's the point too of taking
it's not
back
my story
the power of, my... of the word, right? Is like,
yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah. Lyrics are like, is not, I guess I didn't even really get that interested in looking. I know I'm usually the lyrics guy too. And in this case, I just didn't feel like looking up the lyrics. And maybe that was part of it. Maybe I think this album is a little bit of an exercise in letting go. And then when you can let go, you can really just like, you know,
one album where I feel like I should have been looking for the lyrics because I couldn't understand them. You're just like, nah, forget about it.
Yeah, but that's the thing, right? I think this, you know, like we've listened to albums that are like, what's the hard to digest, you know?
Yeah.
Like Bitches Brew, even the Stooges, you know, like if you're
it's
not
challenging.
Yeah, challenging for sure. And this is, I wouldn't say like musically it's challenging in a way that those are. This would probably be closer to the Stooges than like Bitches Brew or something like that, right? But the difference is that somehow the vibe, I guess, of this album, it helps bring down. It's just it's mellow.
Yeah.
Right. Even though it's like, you know, it's got moments that are avant-garde. It's got moments that are like, yeah, just shouldn't work technically, or at least, you know, don't quite make sense. You know, like it's not straightforward pop for the most part, or it's not even really straightforward funk or R&B or anything. But yeah, maybe it's just that vibe. Maybe there's like more welcoming feeling to the whole thing.
Hmm.
I don't know if that makes any sense. I don't know if I'm.
Yeah, well, I mean, what you're basically saying is it's like the listener is going through a drug trip because it was written going through a drug trip. So it's just like a channeling of his vibe at the time, basically, right?
Yeah, but maybe it's also that because people are comparing this to earlier albums, they kept using the word dark. And I'm like, there's elements, it's darker for sure. But this is what I consider dark.
Yeah, no, it's not dark as in like.
Like Nick Cave and the Bad Seeds or something.
Yeah.
Right? Like this is dark for funk music.
Yeah.
Which is some of the snappiest, poppiest, like happiest, like we're just having a good time, you know,
still
music.
Like it's still like a dirtier funk for sure.
Oh, it's super dirty funk.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not always pure funk, right? Like I would say the only two songs on it that are straightforward funk are Brave and Strong and Smiling. You know, and they're kind of happy, easygoing songs. Like You Caught Me Smiling Again. Like, you know, that's pretty. Otherwise, like it gets weird in places or it tries a lot of things. You know, like Africa is like an endlessly noodly jam or whatever. Right.
Well, there's two. There's Thanks for Talking to Me, Africa. And then there's Africa Talks to You the other way around.
Yeah.
So the outgoing song.
The two longest jams.
Yeah. And I noticed it's kind of jammy, especially that "Thank You for Talking to Me, Africa," because the bass line never changes, and it started to bore the shit out of me that it was just the same bass line over and over and over.
But here's another thing changed. It's interesting, though, is that that's kind of a bit of a commentary on the career up to this point, too, because that's a deconstructed version of the last big hit they had, which was "Thank You for Letting Me mm-hmm. Be Myself Again," mm-hmm. right? Mm-hmm. And originally, this album was going to be called "Thanks for Talking to Me, Africa." Mm-hmm. Thank mm-hmm. you for talking to me, Africa. It was what the album was originally going to be titled. But then Marvin Gaye put out "What's Going On," and for mm-hmm. some reason, Sly decided that he had to answer the question. Answer the question, and that's why it's
what's
called,
going on. There's a riot going on. That's what's going on.
You want to know what's going on, Marvin? So this is an answer, and then you know the artwork is interesting because at first glance it's an American flag, but then you realize that the blue has been replaced by black, and the stars have been replaced by suns instead of stars. Mm-hmm. And I don't know exactly. I think I saw a couple of versions of it. Some quote about like, yeah, Betty Ross like you know knocked it out of the park the first time, but I thought I could do better, make a better flag,
fixed it for you.
I don't know exactly what the commentary is, but they also, for some reason, even though it's not that controversial, felt that it was a little bit in certain markets. They released a version that was just a shot of the band playing live as the album cover, because I don't know, maybe in the South or something. I'm not sure why nobody, you know, somewhere where people be upset to see a remixed version of the American flag. Yeah. There's a couple of kind of endless weird jams on here for sure. Even like, you know, "Time" I would feel like is kind of the is the psychedelic track.
Yeah.
But also I noticed that's also the, like, you know, it was going solid with the more straightforward funk for a couple tracks, and then "Time" it's a good spot on the album to like switch up the feel. Mm-hmm. I don't know, that's kind of me. I don't know where that was specifically, maybe mid side two or something like that.
Yep.
But I don't know about you, Charlie, but I noticed it the other day. We were kind of sharing some playlists.
Yeah.
And all of a sudden you were like, I'm just going to
slip this in here. Just quote, see if it works.
And so Space Cowboy, I think might be my jam.
I figured it would be album. Because I had originally written some notes, but now I don't know where they are. They were deleted off of whatever I was writing them on. But I said country funk.
Mm.
It's basically like a funk, like a folk funk song.
Yeah, interesting. I'm the drum machine very prominent in that track. And so that was fun. All of a sudden he's yodeling. Like I guess, does that make it country funk or funky?
I mean,
country?
I just got like an old school, like, you know, folk. It to me, it looked like, if you looked at it on paper, it reads like a folk song, and then with the yodeling it reads like a folk song, but then Sly performed it, so it was like a lot funkier.
It was interesting for sure, man. Like, I mean, I'm here for it, as the kids say. My note was I put yodeling, like, exclamation question mark, and then behind that I just put fuck yeah. And then a big line to drum machine. Also, big drum machine feel on "Time" as well. Like, so I don't know if this album was recorded, or maybe I just became more and more aware of the drum machine as I listened through the record.
There was a little bit more. There was like at least one on the first side. I can't remember what it was. I wrote it on my nose.
First song right off the bat, listening back, because I've listened to this album now, like, I don't know, at least four more times through. Mm-hmm. I've now that, like, after my first listen, that drum machine, because I'm now that I'm aware of it, is so much more prevalent. It's like,
right.
It's like everywhere, you know, you're like, oh, right. But well, the first listen through, I think "Time" and "Space Cowboy," where I was like, holy fuck, this drum machine, like, you know,
it's spaced. Cowboy, right? Like with a D on the end, not space cowboy.
Spaced cowboy.
Like spaced out cowboy.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
And I'll make that into a shirt.
Spaced cowboy.
Hell yeah.
Yeah, I don't know.
And then to keep it going, the next track after that, "Running Away," Now, what do you consider that? Is that avant-garde pop?
So I was thinking about that. And remember when we were listening to Dusty Springfield?
Yeah.
And there was all that those elements of like 60s French pop?
Mm-hmm.
Or I had a different name for the genre. And I looked it up because I was like, I keep hearing that like pop, like New Vogue or something right, like that. Right, it's right. Like something I was, but I'm like, I try to look that genre specifically up. And I'm like, what I keep finding is a genre called Yeah, Yeah.
Yeah, yeah.
Huh?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Oh, anyway,
like Lord, Randy yeah, Marsh. Yeah.
Well, apparently it's based on the fact that a lot of pop music in the 60s, like thanks to, you know, especially British invasion groups like the Beatles, had a lot of yeah, 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 yeah in their music, or at least that's the way non-English speaking people took it, right? Like, I don't know what they're saying, but they keep going, yeah, 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 yeah. So they started calling their pop music yeah, yeah music. Mm-hmm. That music where people go, yeah, yeah.
Yeah.
They're not wrong, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway, so I don't know if that's the technical term for it or what is, but let's just say French pop music. Yeah, I made a note about that. I said the vocal melody, it gave me vibes of like I think it's technically a Spanish song or no?
That
Southern,
sounds like
South American.
You sounded like Michael Bublé's cover of "Save the Last Dance."
Well, I was thinking more like bossa nova, like we were mentioning before. I was thinking a little bit more like Girl from Ipanema.
Ah. Sort of, yeah, but yeah. But a little bit more, I think maybe that's part of where the avant-garde pop comes in. Because I'm starting to, and I've heard songs that sound like this and like the other stuff on the Dusty album that I was saying that I really liked. And I think I might be into that kind of stuff a lot, because here it is again with Running Away. And I was like, oh, this is awesome.
Well, okay. It reminds me of like, remember in the early 2000s, there was kind of a bit of a, like, what would you call it? There was kind of a movement in like a softer version of alt rock, like bands like Belle and Sebastian and stuff like that.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah. I know what you mean.
Yeah. You know, and I feel like that's a little bit throwbacky to stuff like this. Now, I don't think they're referencing Running Away specifically, but like that, you know, that soft trumpet, that vocal melody.
Yeah. I mean, I'm going to figure it out. I'm going to look more into it because it's got kinda, my attention more now.
It's kind of like proto hipster, right?
I have to figure out it's probably not really hipster at the time. It was just hip at the time.
Maybe, yeah, I don't know. It's
which
like
is why it would make sense to me if it was like avant-garde pop or something like that.
I was gonna say, what's his face who makes all those really twee movies?
What?
Wes Anderson.
Twee? Oh,
yeah, twee. You know twee.
What does twee mean?
Twee's that whole scene, that whole soft pop and all, like all, that, you know, that alternative.
This is like shoegaze again, where I'm like, what the fuck is that?
Twee. Probably. I don't know. It's a twee term that we started using in the 90s. You know?
Well, then you think I know.
People who wear sweaters, people who wear sweater and collar combinations. Young sure, people who okay, wear sweater whatever. And collar combinations. People, young people who unironically dress like Mr. Rogers.
Oh, I call those hipsters.
And listen to Belle and Sebastian.
I call those hipsters.
Yeah, but this would have been pre-hipstery.
This is pre-hipster. Okay. So there's
a hipsters 101.
There's a hipster that's like the Gavin McGinnis, you know, like wax mustache, wear a toque all summer, you know, wear skinny jeans.
Oh, I know that guy.
Yeah, that's the more recent version of the hipster. Before that, there was, you know, just your like you had your twee.
Okay.
Your twee rock. Anyway, I think they just. Think of like somebody who would wear tweed and then drop the D.
Okay. I'm on board.
Because it's cool to drop letters out of words.
I don't think that's where it comes from, but maybe it does. I don't know the history of the word twee. But yeah, actually, there you go. Running Away. Kind of a twee song. It's proto-twee. proto-twee rock. Maybe Sly got there first. I don't know. Yeah. And then you already talked about how the last song ends with a deconstructed and then kind of goes off in a jam. Deconstructed version of the Thank You, the original version of Thank You. Actually, that took me a minute when I was listening to it. I was like, wait, is this Thank You? Is this like an extended album version of the song? Like, and then as it gets further into it, I'm like, I don't think so. And then as soon as this album ended and then the algorithm took over, the very next song it played was the original version of Thank You. I'm like, oh, there you go. So, but I guess Thank You must have been a bit of a commentary or something of like, thank you for, you know, let me make those records, but now I'm going in a different direction.
Mm-hmm.
So Sly did not last as a band. The Family Stone did not last long after this. I think it was in the wake of this album. Most of their regular musicians, except for some of the core members, had all left at this point anyway. He didn't really use them in the studio. And then conflicts with, you know, and the band, like the core members were actually the Family Stone. They were his brothers and sisters, right? Literally.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know all of them, but I know that's the case. I think they lasted a few months after the release of this album before they all called it quits, or did they make it one more record? Or
what happened is in 1975, the band had booked themselves to play at Radio City Music Hall, which is like, you know, they're a legacy, like they're a big band, they should be able to get a good crowd there, and only 1/8 of the crowd capacity filled up.
Ooh. by 1975,
and then they had called it quits shortly after that. The band was dissolved anyway,
so I think that was like two albums after this. I think they had two more after this one then.
Fresh and Small Talk came out after this.
Okay.
73 and 74.
Fresh was still a pretty big record though, right?
I believe so.
Oh, let me look at some of the tracks here.
I think that was the one that had, is that the one that had Que Sera Sera on it?
Yep.
That's such a good version.
That's a cover, right? Yes, it is. Doris Day's song.
If You Want Me to Stay is a good track on there. Que Sera Sera. I think those are the two big ones off of there anyways.
The Chili Peppers covered If You Want Me to Stay. Wow.
But yeah, From all accounts, I Fresh is a return to maybe not an earlier sound, but like a more poppy, radio friendly kind of sound or whatever, right? But I think just Sly's behavior and, you know, just his constant problems with like drugs and whatnot and clashing with other members of the band, like, yeah, wore them thin. So I don't think they lasted through. Maybe they lasted through Fresh. I'm not sure, but they definitely did not make it. Like you said, by 75, the Family Stone was officially done. But he had like a comeback album in the late 70s, and then another comeback album in the early 80s, and then that was it. I think by 83, he stopped producing music professionally, and has only made the odd appearance since then.
I can't believe he's still alive, honestly. Yeah. 78 years old.
There might have been something in the 90s that happened, like a project, like it might have been maybe a reunion or something. I'm not sure. There's been like a few things here and there, but yeah, I don't know. It's crazy to think, because you just think about like how positive their image and their message was leading up to this record.
Right.
And then it just takes such a turn. And then supposedly now this album is really well reviewed. Right.
Mm-hmm.
And it's on this list.
I mean, it's one of the 100 goats.
Yeah. And when you look at like, you know, the, you know, it's just the ratings like 5 stars, 5 stars, 5 stars, 4.5, 5, 5, you know, like
this album is an excellent Uber driver.
Wow. Yeah,
totally. Which is interesting to me. I noticed something, guys. There's a pattern to this list, and maybe I don't know, maybe you've noticed it too, or maybe I'm just finding patterns where there are none. But let me ask you if you've noticed this, that so far the albums that seem to make this list are kind of one of two categories. Either they broke an artist, you know, like maybe not their debut album, but the album that like made everybody notice them.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Or it's an artist that was already noticed, and it's them like, you know, doing something experimental or taking a chance or like, you know,
changing music itself.
Well, but just going like, if they've had success, pop success, mm-hmm. then they're like challenging that pop success and making right. an album that's a little more inaccessible or challenging or whatever. Those seem to be the two categories.
Yeah.
But I think this list should be composed of albums that changed the course and direction of music history. So I hope, and I do see that a lot too.
Yeah. I mean, I get that, right? Because you take someone who's got an established career doing one thing and then they change it and then they try something different and it's going to make big noise, right? Because you're like, I was not expecting that. And no, it moves stuff over into the whole next, moves just over into the next track anyways, you know?
Yeah. Mm. Now in this, well, what was I going to say? I kind of lost my train of thought there, but in this case, it's interesting. I mean, they're always interesting. But it's just like, it shouldn't work. Mm. Like, it really sounds like a demo. Like, the whole album sounds like a demo. And I know it's a cliche thing that people have said about certain albums, you know, that the A&R guys, you know, whatever, the fucking label guys, you know, the management heard it and were like, we can't put this out, this is a demo, like we gotta go back in the studio and make the real record. You know, somebody's like, this is a genius and it's gotta go out. But I mean, it really does sound like a demo.
It does. Yeah.
Like, it's got the quality of a demo, right? You know, the kind of thing, like, it reminds me in some ways of like fucking around with like a four track, you know, with like my high school band and trying to figure out how that works. Totally. And us going like, oh, cool. Did you know that you could do like this? Like, you know, we can overdub this. He's like, we could bounce this down and then we can put that tape back in here. And then now we've got four more tracks or three more tracks or whatever.
Yeah, that sounds like what I used to do with my cassette player.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. Right. That this has so many qualities of that. And it's interesting that it's like, it works. And I think my point earlier that I kind of lost my train of thought on it is, and maybe this applies to some of the other ones I'm talking about, is that the fact that this even sees the light of day is only because this person had an established hit making career that they're willing to go like, all right, Sly, you got it.
Right.
You want to do heroin in a cot in the studio? Great. You want to do the vocals on your back? Awesome. Like, you know, like, you don't get a like. So in a weird way, you have to like almost, I don't know. Like, I don't know where I'm going with that other than it's like, yeah, those, it's weird to me that those are the moments that change music, right?
Mm-hmm.
Because bands that heard this and went on to like, you know, say like, hey man, if this guy's doing this, then why don't we try more wild shit? Are the bands that became like, you know, like the records that, like the Mothership Connection records that came out, you know, in the years after this, where they're like, look, let's do a whole fucking track about an alien called the Funky Worm. You know, like, what the fuck? Why not? Right? Like shit like that. And then, hey, and then you get the P-Funk All-Stars, and then Dr. Dre samples them for G-Funk, and then you get the best era of gangster rap ever.
Mm.
So thanks to Sly, you get G-Funk, and you're going to get the 2022 halftime show.
I can't wait.
Right? Who's on that? Dre.
Everybody. Dude, awesome.
Eminem. Who else? Is Mary J. Blige?
Mary J. Blige, yeah. Kendrick Lamar.
Like, they brought Kendrick on to be like, okay, we need to establish that, you know, somebody kept that. I mean, they're all still active and doing their thing, but like Kendrick's the more contemporary of that whole crew, right?
Fucking Dr. Dre, man. Awesome. Oh,
there you go. So thanks to Sly, thanks to this album. That's your legacy.
That's why we have this. That's why we have this halftime show.
That makes me feel like
I know now. I remember what else I was going to say too about, but the thing that is interesting though, is that because it's so out of left field that initially people, it's mixed, right? Like the responses aren't like, this is genius. It's always in like some retrospect that you're like, actually.
Right. We get that a lot on this list too, right? Where it's like, you know, it wasn't taken so well once it came out, but after a while, there's that slow burn effect and you're like, oh, actually, this is really good.
Well, I think that's what falls into that experimental avant-garde Like, I don't know. Have we seen any albums that came out of the gate where they're like, nobody knew who this guy was, but then he did the weirdest, wildest album that shouldn't work, and it blew everybody's mind.
Everybody bought all of them.
I don't really think so.
I don't remember.
All right. Well, I don't know. Any more points or anything else to say about this record? It won me over.
Mm-hmm.
I'm into it. I'm into it as, you know...
It would make me listen to some of the other albums they put out. You know, I feel like I'd be more interested in hearing some of the other stuff.
Well, man,
based upon what I heard here.
I'll tell you one thing. It really got me because, you know, I'd let this play and then realize how different this was when the algorithm would take over. And all of a sudden I'm like, I'm hearing, you know, everything from Sam and Dave to like what else, you know, just like that whole era of soul and funk and R&B. You know, but what's interesting though is like how the production on that stuff and the playing is so tight. What's his? I'm trying to think of the song right now. Do you know the song I'm talking about? Will it go round in circles?
This is very exciting.
Ah, son of a bitch! Why isn't it popping up to my head? Funk song, or you know, where it was a drummer who sang, big guy.
Will it go round in circles? Like that's the name of the song, isn't it?
Yeah, yeah.
Billy Preston.
Yes. Thank you. Like Billy Preston pops on and I'm like, God damn. Like this shit was on the radio, man. Like people like just turned on their fucking radio on this tape. Like nobody who you didn't need Spotify, you know, like the radio was playing jams. I'm sure there was, you know, some like not so great easy listening stations back then too, but fuck it, man. If you can flip the dial and you can hear, yeah. You can hear Billy Preston. You can hear Bill Withers, right? Like, sure. Oh, God damn. Anyway. Yeah. But it really illustrated how much this particular record stands out from that pack.
Mm-hmm.
Like this was like, I'm doing something different. So I don't know. I guess he got carte blanche to do that after kind of, you know, being a real big player in that field. But not so many hit records, right? All right. I don't know. Do you guys got anything else? Any 2 cents you want to put in about it?
I think that's it. I think we said it.
Mm-hmm.
Except I need to find out how I can get a whole bunch of those old school drum track organ beat sounds without going and getting a giant ass organ.
Okay. I'm sure you can. Just find out what exactly the drum machine he was using was and then just find like a
that because those are
just find so a plugin good. That makes those noises.
Yes,
that can't be that hard. That's got to exist, right? There's a lot.
I got a good old Yamaha keyboard from 1990 here that has a sweet bossa nova on it.
I mean, borrow it. That's one thing, but like, I need older. I need vintage. This give me those vintage sounds.
All right, let's find out what Rolling Stone had to say about it. How about that? So coming in at number 82, Sly and the Family Stone, There's a Riot Going On. This highly anticipated studio follow-up to Sly and the Family Stone's 1969 Blast of Hope, Stand, was the grim, exact opposite, implosive, numbing, darkly self-referential. Sly Stone's voice is an exhausted grumble. The funk in Family Affair, Running Away, and especially the closing downward spiral, Thank You for Talking to Me, Africa, is spare and bleak. I wonder if that was supposed to say sparse and bleak. Fiercely compelling in its anguish over the unfulfilled promises of civil rights and hippie counterculture, it is Muzak with its finger on the trigger, wrote critic Agriel Marcus in Mystery Train. Take that as a recommendation. I mean, yeah. Like, it's funny, Muzak. I think I know what they mean by, like, Muzak at the time, right? You right. know? Like, I don't think they mean what it came to mean. Like, elevator music is the way we think of music now, right? Mm-hmm. But otherwise, yeah. Like, the only thing I would say is that as much as people call this dark, and there's definitely darkness to it, it's still not, like, dark the way... There's a weird optimism to it, you know? Not in the way like, you know, like a Nick Cave, like I said before.
Is it as dark as funk can get? Is there darker funk?
I don't know. It'd be interesting to just find, like, is there minor key funk?
you can go on the funk scale without not being on that scale anymore.
Yeah. Where was it in the original?
It came in 2012. It was number 99. So it's moved up a whole bunch.
Okay. Interesting.
And as a further and also interesting note, previously, or number 82 in 2012 was Harvest by Neil Young.
Oh, topical.
Very topical. I swear this is true. This is the book.
Early February 2022. It'll be interesting to look back.
I'd rather listen to this.
Hey, there's your hot take. Okay, well, what do you guys think? Does it deserve its rating?
Yeah, I think so. 100%.
Its rank, I should say. Yeah, you're a 100%er.
Yep.
Like, I guess I would have to see. Yeah.
All in.
I guess I would have to see if there's more Sly and the Family Stone albums coming up, because I would say that I would like to hear what else they've done before I make a judgment call on that.
Yeah.
You know,
that's a good one. I definitely think this album is, I'm glad I listened to it. I'm glad that it's in, you know, my lexicon of, you know, this is one of those ones I'm going to refer to when I'm trying to be smarter and cooler than people at parties. Right. Mm. Of course. I'd be like, I mean, you have to have heard Riot, right? I mean, he fucking recorded the whole thing on his back doing heroin. Can't wait to be that guy at the party.
Yeah.
So I think, you know, it deserves to be recognized. It deserves to be on this list somewhere for sure. 82. I don't know. I'm not 100% on that, but I guess that leaves the other question. Is it going to go in your record collection?
Man, I'm so easy to please. Hell yeah, it's going in my record collection.
Yeah. Naomi, what about you?
No.
You're pickier, though.
No shockers. No shockers. I'm a yes, you're a no.
This is going in my record
collection. You'd be shocked if I said yes.
Yeah. This one's going in. This one's going in my record collection for sure.
Yeah.
100%. Nice. Yeah.
It's sweet.
Oh, it just needs to be there just as, I don't know. Like
to throw on at a party,
just the 1-2 punch for me of Spaced Cowboy and then Running Away keeps me spinning side two over and over. I think
I just, yeah, I want to be able to be to pull that out and be like, you know, okay, see, at a party, I'm putting on, like, you know, the greatest hits album or something, right? Because that's the party music,
that's the good party jams. Yeah,
this isn't the party music, this is the, like, you want to show your friend, like, you ever hear this record, man? You ever hear Sly Get Weird? You ever heard Spaced Cowboy? Like,
this is so good.
Yeah, this is the deep cuts, man. This is the one that impresses the guy at the record store when you bring it up to the counter, which is always the best part of making your purchases, is when they stop and go like, oh yeah, all right on.
Oh, cool pick. Yeah, cool pick.
Got one. So yeah. definitely. Well, I mean, you never know. You might be like, oh, one of these guys who thinks they're cool because they they can't be real snobs. They're hard to impress. That's why it is a challenge. That's why it's the game. All right, guys. Well, I think that is our album for the day. Thanks for hanging out with us. Yeah. Hey, if you want to know what else we're doing and, you know, where we'll be and, you know, all that sort of stuff, you want to put your two cents in about this, that, the other thing, you know, you can hit us up. We've got a website. We got all that social media that you can follow. If you just want to go to the website, you can find all our social media links there. Charlie, what is that website?
Oh, that website is l2lpodcast.com.
Right on. And because this is an audio format and we'd love to hear the dulcet tones of your lovely voices, you can always call and leave us a message and maybe we'll play it. Maybe we'll play it at the end of the show, or who knows, maybe it'll be relevant enough to our conversation and bring it up in the middle of a real show. So yeah. Why don't you call us? What's that number, Naomi?
You can call us at 780-851-8785. We've had a couple calls, so right, it's on. Getting
so nice. We need a couple more. That's right. Yeah. You know, just let us know your thoughts, your feelings, all that sort of stuff about any episode we're doing or any topic we're talking about, whatever it is. You know, it doesn't have to be this one. You listen to another episode and you're still thinking about it. You want to give us a piece of your mind, or you want to tell us, hey, you know what? You had a good take on that one, you guys. let us know.
So you know what I'd love to hear? You know the times when we're like, I don't know if we're saying this right. I don't know if this is the right genre, but sort us out.
Yeah, tell us how stupid we are, guys. Yeah, we're doing like, this off the cuff.
Idiots.
You for guys, free, by the way.
Yeah, you got to know the right genre. Tell us. Call us. Do it.
Yeah. So 780-851-8785. That's that number. And of course, we are fully realized human beings with our own thoughts and feelings and desires. And we got our own stuff going on. Like, Charlie, what do you do?
Well, first of all, I like to tell you I'm a real human person, and I sell t-shirts over at oldmandesign.com, where you can get all kinds of designs for oldmandesign.com if you need yourself some new t-shirts. Come on down to oldmandesign.com. We'll get you sorted.
Right on. Naomi, what do you got going on?
We got another podcast in the house, Dope Nostalgia, where we talk to people who did their thing in the 90s. The next upcoming guest we have was the lady who sang on the Meatloaf song, I Would Do Anything for Love, But I Won't Do That. And her name is Lorraine Crosby, and she's going to be on the show.
Oh, she had a killer voice. Still probably has a killer voice. I'm just thinking about that. Very cool. And how I got it on cassette in my stocking and whenever it came out, like 91, 92. Right on.
She's so cool.
Okay. Yeah. So, everybody, if you want to help us out, you like what we're doing, you can also head to our Patreon, patreon.com/learningtolisten. We got about an extra 20 to 30 minutes of bonus content on this episode alone that you could check out. And other than that, episodes go out early. And yeah, we have got a lot of stuff going on there that you can check out. So patreon.com/learningtolisten. Just help us out. You know, we're doing this for free. Spotify doesn't pay us shit. So,
oh, yeah.
All right.
Joe Rogan gets all the money.
Yeah, Joe Rogan gets it all. Hey, guys, let's do this half cup half full. Just remember, a rising tide lifts all ships. Right? I think that's okay. How that works. Okay. Anyway, thanks for listening. Thanks for hanging out with us today. You guys want to know what we're doing next week?
What are we going to do next? What could possibly follow this
next? Oh, how about a little known artist named Beyonce?
Yay!
Her self-titled album from 2013.
I'm so excited.
Called Beyonce, Beyonce, Beyonce.
Did you not actually know that was coming up on the list?
I totally forgot. I know I looked at it, but
that's right. Hey, and then we got some good ideas for some bargain bins coming up. So, but we'll tell you about those next time. So, that's it. That's everything, guys. You know, here's the problem with a wrap it up joke this time. We've been talking about heroin. I don't know. I guess let's put it this way. Their career got to about 1975 and the record company said, all right, guys, wrap it up.
Same.
It's a dark record.
That could have gone dark, yeah.
I could have gone darker.
The 1990s. The music was fun.
Yeah.
And then it got really dark for a while, a little bit anti-establishment.
But the next thing you knew, it was totally fun again.
So many artists came and went and left us wondering, what are they doing now? This podcast isn't about the heavy hitters who are still making millions. It's about everyone else, the ones whose careers didn't really leave that decade and kind of just still live in our memory.
So you mean Vanilla Ice had another song?
We all know what happened to Marky Mark. But what about the Funky Bunch? Who were the KLF? And why did Tammy Wynette record a song with an electro dance band that topped the charts? Two genres that specifically defined the 90s. What were freestyle and new jack swing all about? Did you know that Blossom star Joey Lawrence had a huge pop hit? Or that Alanis Morissette had a really hot pop career in Canada before Jagged Little Pill? Special guests will also be joining me to discuss the great era of glitter, grunge, Thin eyebrows, hammer pants, and total ridiculousness. We're even setting up some interviews with some of the musicians that define the times.
Okay, so if you're older than 30, you might be sitting here going, man, I totally remember that song, but I have no idea who does that. Well, then you better listen and find out.
I'm Naomi Carmack, host of the Ultimate 90s podcast, Dope Nostalgia. You're going to be busting the move again, coming in early 2020. You want to follow us so that you know when we go live? Check out our Twitter at NostalgiaDope, or you can find us on Instagram at Dope_Nostalgia. If you've got a question or you just want to be on the show, email us at DopeNostalgiaPodcast@gmail.com.